Hi, everybody. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford, sitting next to Wes Hodkiewicz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes will start off by following up on the Packers' 31-26 loss to the Indianapolis Colts on Sunday. On Monday, we heard from head coach Mike McCarthy and the team's coordinators reviewing the film, kind of the usual Monday aftermath from the coaching staff. One of the more interesting things I thought that McCarthy said was he backtracked a little bit on his post-game statement about the lack of energy that he felt from the team. After he reviewed the film, he really didn't feel so much about it being a lack of energy, but it was really about the sharpness, the attention to detail that he saw on the field at some critical moments in the game that was really the Packers' downfall.
Yeah, I mean, that was, you know, kind of the overlying assumption and kind of the estimate going back and reviewing the film on it. And certainly that is one of the things when you actually step back, take the emotion out of it, really can just sort of analytically take a glimpse at everything that you're going to determine and you're going to find out. And certainly I think the big message from Mike McCarthy was the fact that it wasn't so much as the energy just wasn't there. It just wasn't channeled in maybe the right ways. And in terms of, you know, the crispness and you know, being able to get off to the fast start that they wanted to offensively, special teams, certainly that was an issue there. And especially right off the get-go, there was a little bit of a letdown. So there's a lot of things that you can kind of go over and analyze with this. But I thought one of the big things that listen to the coordinators speak as well, and Dom Capers, is that there were a lot of positives to draw out of the game. The only problem was there just wasn't enough of them to be able to pull it out as a victory.
Yeah, and it really did come down, as we talked on our last show, about the critical moments, the third downs. The Packers actually had their worst game on third down offensively, and it was their second worst game of the season on third down defensively. I think somewhat implicit in McCarthy's message, and I wrote about this on our website, the message about energy, I think he knows that message is going to be carried through the locker room from the leaders on the team, guys like Mike Daniels, who, right, you know, has certainly had no shortage of words for his frustration with the team's performance. I think the energy, the emotion, the enthusiasm message is going to be carried within the locker room. I think Mike McCarthy, by changing his tune a little bit, is saying, as a head coach, you know, I need to get the team to focus on the execution and to focus on the details and to focus on playing sharp, good quality football, because no matter how fired up and emotional you get, that's not necessarily going to make, right, you play better. And I think it's a combination of everything, and the head coach is leaving the emotional part to the locker room, and he's leaving the other part to the coaching staff, and at least that's the way I see it.
Yeah, and you heard Aaron Rodgers discuss that a little bit when he was talking about some of the issues that he felt were there, particularly with the offense. It wasn't that, as he said, he's like, I'm not a rah-rah type guy. He's not a guy that's going to be going out giving these really impassioned, you know, your life is on the line kind of speeches. But there is a focus there, and there's really a an internal sort of drive that he has that he hopes to, you know, be able to permeate through the rest of that room. And I think that was one of the things in this game, is that whatever reason it was, that energy didn't really translate to success early on, and then certainly you had the setbacks. That was the biggest key. And I think when you really break this down and try to move on from it, I'm sure they saw it when they went over the film, there just were too many areas where there were the miscues, whether it was the special teams, yeah, whether it was falling into a couple doldrums offensively and not being able to get the stops on third down for the defense. I thought that was really one of the big things too, Mike, is that they had 7 conversions, the Colts did, in that game, and 5 of them came on those 2 critical series that Dom Capers outlined. They were able to get production. It just wasn't the right amount of production at the right time.
Yeah, for sure. And if there was any lack of energy or lack of emotion on the sidelines during the game, I'm not dismissing that perhaps wasn't an issue. But if there was that lack of energy, based on what we've heard from Mike Daniels over the last couple of days, I don't think it's going to be a problem anymore. I mean, he lays it out there.
He
wears his emotions on his sleeve. He's pretty honest and upfront with the media about his own personal emotions, and this is a guy who's having, you know, who's having a hard time swallowing this loss. I think he knows that the Packers should not have lost this game at home, and he knows how critical it is to the season. And there's no there's really not much more margin for error going forward in the second half of this season for Green Bay.
Well, this also shows you how talented Mike Daniels is. He's involved in every element of the defense now, whether it's the pass rush, the run defense, whatever it might be. He's going to have a hand in it. So when something doesn't go right, he takes it as a personal responsibility. As Dom Capers said, it means a lot to him.
Yeah.
And this is a guy, and Capers said he loves that about him. He loves the fact that he wears his emotions on his sleeve. He loves the fact that in the locker room afterwards, you can hear Mike, you know, getting upset in the background and, you know, kind of hooting and hollering a little bit. That's Mike Daniels. That's Mike Diesel. That's him. And really, for this whole defense, I think that's the kind of attitude that they've been trying to instill, not just after this game, but the last couple years. And it's going to be one of these things that you have to respond to it. Words are one thing, actions are another. But as Daniel said, he hopes that nobody gets a good night's sleep the rest of the week, that they go into this game against the Titans hungry and really angry.
Yeah, for sure. Well, there's a couple other issues I want to touch on about the defense when we come back after a break. We'll be back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, sticking with our discussion about the defense, we've seen the last 2 weeks basically two entirely different approaches to pass rush by Dom Capers. Against the Falcons, we talked about it all last week, that it was a very conservative approach. It was keep the safeties deep to help out the cornerbacks to try to prevent the big play. Pretty much, you know, rely on the four-man rush up front to get home and to disrupt things. It didn't work. The Packers end up losing the game on a touchdown with 31 seconds left. You shift gears now to the Colts game, and Dom Capers, he emptied the blitz bag practically against Andrew Luck. Five-man pressures, six-man pressures, sometimes inside linebackers, sometimes safety, right, sometimes a combination of the two. And at the end of the day, you still only got two sacks, just like you had against the Falcons. And Clay Matthews or no Clay Matthews, and we found out from Mike McCarthy that Clay Matthews had a setback with his hamstring on Friday, which is why he sounded on Thursday like a guy who was going to play, right, and then ended up being inactive. But with or without Matthews, this defensive front has got to find a way to get to the quarterback on a more consistent basis, because it's really been, in my opinion, the biggest factor in some of the defensive struggles these last 2 weeks.
Yeah, and you go back, Mike, to when the Packers were playing that dominant style defense in the first month of the season. It was because, one, they were getting pressure on the quarterback, and two, they were able to stop the run. They actually are still doing a pretty good job of stopping the run. Now they're back in first place after this past week at 75.8 points or yards per game. But the pass rush, only four sacks in the last 2 weeks, has been an area that I think has left them wanting a little bit more. That was another part of Mike Daniels' message when he met with the media, was that he doesn't know what it is. He doesn't know exactly what it all boils down to and why they haven't been getting home as much. But when you do hit Andrew Luck eight times, you have to end up with more than two sacks. And you go back and you watch the film, whether it was the almost sack that Jake Ryan had, the ha-ha Clinton Dix miss at the end of the game. Julius Peppers was within a few fingers away of getting his hands on him earlier in the game that ended up turning into a scramble, I believe, for 6 or 7 yards. So there's those type of plays that ultimately I think are going to be what decide an outcome of a football game. And as you said, if they don't have Clay Matthews, depending on what's going to happen with him, Mike McCarthy wasn't making any projections as far as availability this week.
Right.
But if at any point in this season that you don't have Clay Matthews going forward, you have to be able to find ways to still generate that pass rush, because he's not drawing the double teams anymore. He's not drawing the attention. It's going to be more balanced out. It's going to be more even, and that's where you have to win your one-on-one matchups.
Yeah, for sure. This Packers defensive front was so good in the first month of the season at disrupting quarterbacks, not needing to blitz. You could protect the young guys in the secondary a little bit more often with the safeties back, and we saw, you know, I mean, Capers felt he had to force Andrew Luck's hand. The Colts' bread and butter is the downfield routes, which take time to develop.
Right.
So the way to try to prevent too many of those from developing is to make him get the ball out faster, so you bring the pressure. But that leaves, your young cornerbacks one-on-one against some speedy wide receivers. T.Y. Hilton and Philip Dorsett can run with the best of them. And you know, so there just – there wasn't a perfect solution for the Packers in this game. And, I'm not sure what the answer is going forward. I'm not a coach. We'll see with Quentin Rollins being back. He'll be back hopefully now for his second game. Maybe Demarius Randall comes back in a few more weeks. We'll see. The defense is probably going to look different in a few more weeks if you get Randall back, if you get Matthews back. But you've got three straight road games here, and you're sitting at 500, and you can't afford to fall behind any farther.
No, and you also, by the way, have to make sure that Micah Hyde's okay after having that shoulder injury that he left the game with. That's been your most consistent, healthiest cornerback throughout the entire course of the season. So that's going to be an issue in terms of not only just the Hyde position, but just the secondary in general. We don't know when Demarius Randall is going to be back. You do get back Quentin Rollins. He'll get his feet back underneath him. Dimitri Goodson was cleared in time from the concussion protocol to play in the game. So you're starting to get some of that depth back as much as you can right now in terms of who's on the active roster. But it comes down to in the trenches there that you have all these pieces, Nick Perry and some of these guys that really got shot out of a cannon to start the season, being able to really keep that momentum going through the middle part and portion of the season, because people now they're seeing Nick Perry on film again. They're seeing Daniels.
It's all out there.
Yeah. You're seeing Mike Daniels in the trenches, and he's seeing more double teams. So, I mean, those are all things that people are going to try to take them away, you have to win the other matchups. And whether it is with the blitz or not with the blitz, you have to get home. And that was one of the things against both Matt Ryan with the more conservative approach and with Andrew Luck with the blitzing approach, just wasn't quite able to get it done.
Yeah, and we saw an interesting move actually in the secondary. You mentioned Hyde's injury, the shoulder injury. When he left the game, Dom Capers actually went to Kentrell Bryce, the rookie safety, as a slot cornerback. Kind of mixed up that nickel and dime package a little bit there. And Bryce played a more prominent role and actually was called on to blitz from the slot a couple of times. His speed definitely shows up in that because he's very, very quick off the line of scrimmage when you cut him loose. Be interesting to see. Obviously, the Packers don't want to be without Micah Hyde for very long. We don't know what his situation is. But again, the Packers are trying to mix and match a lot with young guys in the secondary, and you're going to have ups and downs when you have young players like this. And you just hope that eventually the experience they gain, that things smooth out and you find some more consistency as the second half of the season gets rolling.
Yeah, and then when those slot positions, Mike, that kind of has become a pseudo-safety when you look at Morgan Burnett learning that position, Micah Hyde. Chris Banjo did it before he got injured. So that seems like the natural progression for Bryce. And the fact of the matter is, outside of Quentin Rollins, the other cornerbacks they have on the active roster right now are more perimeter-based corners. Goodson certainly is, and Gunter, that's where most of his works come. So if Hyde's not in there, that really is the logical next step. And, you know, Kentrell Bryce has shown a lot, and we'll just have to continue to hold it down if they have to turn to him again this season.
Yeah, for sure. All right, well, with that, we'll throw it to a break, and we'll be back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. I'm Mike Spofford. He's Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, turning our attention briefly to special teams. The last couple of weeks, we talked about the special teams starting to make some nice impact plays for the Packers. Trevor Davis with the big punt return against the Falcons to set up a touchdown. This past week, it went the other way. Two long kickoff returns, the one for a touchdown to start the game obviously was a tough one to swallow, and then another 61-yard kickoff return that led to a field goal, and then a missed field goal by Mason Crosby that sounded like, from hearing from special teams coordinator Ron Zook on Monday, that it was the hold was not in the right spot, even though Crosby didn't blame the holder after the game for that. But the Packers have some issues to clean up here on special teams, and it's unfortunate because it seemed that phase of the team was starting to go in the positive direction the previous weeks.
Yeah, and Ron Zook is a straight shooter. I mean, we had the media availability on Monday with the coordinators. Zook came out, stepped right to the podium, did not even have to be asked the first question, basically asked it to himself, and said that you can't start off, it goes without saying, but you can't start off a football game the way that they did with a kickoff return for a touchdown. the role of special teams in a lot of ways is to be the forgotten phase, to be the one that no one talks about, much like the long snapper, much like the center, just being able to just do your job and not have any huge, when you're in coverage, not have any huge let-ups there.
Right.
As it turns out, the kick from Mason Crosby doesn't go far enough to the numbers, close enough to the sideline, kind of hangs up there, hovers a little bit, as Crosby said.
Right, and the Packers were doing an unbalanced coverage. They had six guys on the one side, and that's why the kick was supposed to go towards the sideline right there, and it doesn't get far enough, so you're unbalanced to one side, but the ball doesn't follow, and you're kind of behind the eight ball from the start, and then some other bad things happen.
Yeah, and then you had Jermaine Whitehead kind of cut in there and gets blocked into Kyler Fackrell. That opens up a lane on the right side as well for the returner. And then next thing you know, Jordan Topman's in the end zone for a 99-yard touchdown. So then the 61-yarder, as you mentioned, the 48-yard missed field goal, that the spot wasn't quite right on, although Mason Crosby did tell Zook afterwards that he should have made it regardless. He needs to make that kick. So there were just those plays early on that they just weren't able to really quite capitalize on, and certainly in a game that's as close as that, it sometimes can be the special teams that make the ultimate difference.
Yeah, it's tough, and falling behind 7-0 right out of the gate like that is not good. We talked about it yesterday that this particular Packers team just doesn't seem to have, that margin for error. But also, Aaron Rodgers talked about how the team needs to be a little bit mentally tougher to bounce back from a big setback like that, a big punch in the nose, so to speak, right at the beginning of the game. That yeah, they felt like they were chasing that seven. You always feel like you give up a special teams touchdown, you're chasing that 7 points the rest of the game to try to catch up. But Rodgers said mentally the team just has to do a better job of putting it behind them and moving on and still doing what it takes to win.
It's adversity defense. It's adversity situations. I mean, yeah, regardless if it was a 99-yard return or if, let's say, it would have been a 99-yard touchdown pass, that's a big play. That's an explosive play, and they all count for the same on the scoreboard. So that's where the entire team really needs to rally together to pick up that one phase. Not everything's always going to be perfect. I mean, everybody's very clear about that. Davante Adams said that last week. Jordy Nelson's not always going to run the perfect route. Certain things aren't always just going to happen in a line 100%. You have to be able to make up for the areas in which something happens. That was one play that the Packers, as you said, just quite weren't able to get back. And now going forward, I think that was, as Ron Zook said, it's correctable. It's something that they're going to focus on. They'll make some adjustments. They made some big adjustments in the second half with their kickoff coverage unit, moving back, as Zook said, to something they did more towards the beginning of the season in terms of their personnel. So those changes were made, and now going forward, they'll just have to adapt and try to, pull together now going forward.
Yeah, for sure. Well, with that, we'll take care of a little sponsor business here, Wes. Picture this. You and a friend are sitting VIP in plush leather recliners watching the Packers on the 50-yard line at Lambeau Field. Nice picture, isn't it? Well, if you enter Cousin Sub's Best Seats in the House promotion, you and a guest could win a chance to kick back on the 50-yard line in style. Two pairs of lucky Packers fans will be chosen prior to each home game for this VIP experience. Enter daily now through December 12 by completing the entry form and submitting. For complete rules and eligibility, go to packers.com/bestseats. Cousin Subs, we believe in better. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, quickly before we go, we have to at least touch on the Monday night debacle in Seattle. What is it about Monday nights in Seattle? You've got the fail Mary against the Packers. You have the situation against the Lions where the ball was batted out of the back of the end zone,
right,
and the officials botched that call. And then last night you have this unnecessary roughness plowing over the kicker that doesn't get called, and then a mismanagement of the play clock and everything. And at the end of the day, the Bills lose 3 points that they felt they should have had, and so they have to go for it on fourth and goal in the final minute of the game, down by six, instead of potentially just kick a field goal to force overtime. The NFL's got another officiating mess on its hands.
Yeah, I don't know if it's just CenturyLink and it's just it's messing everybody up with the noise or what it is, but I was watching the first half and seeing that all unfold at the end. I'm like, this is a National Football League. This is supposed to be the best of the best, right?
Yeah.
And it was like you're watching your eighth grade, you know, middle school, your kid's football game. You know, just like people talking, can't figure stuff out.
Yeah, like the parents on the sideline needed to be telling them, like, what to do to get it straightened out.
Yeah, the kid's disheveled. I just want to get my $8 an hour and go home. But the thing that was the most interesting about this contest was Sherman obviously coming through, and what we all would have thought logically is roughing the kicker, as Mike Pereira said on Twitter, couldn't actually be called that because the play was shut down, but it should have still been a late hit. No call whatsoever. That could have ended Dan Carpenter's career.
Yeah, it's still
hit.
A personal foul. I don't care what language, what nomenclature you want to put on it. That's a personal foul in the NFL to hit a guy like that.
Well, and as so many people said, I think Adam Schefter made the point too, is that if that is going to stand, if that isn't going to be a personal foul, literally every team in the NFL should be running into the kicker like that at the end of a half or at the end of a game.
Yeah, exactly. It's like Katie bar the door here.
It was something else, and to be able to see that unfold then with the delay of game penalty after that. I mean, well, first off, Buffalo's they're doing like a spike so they can reset the clock.
Well, because Carpenter had to come out
for a play
because the medical guys came out onto the field, so then they had to spike it, and then they got him back out there to kick it, and then it was the play clock fiasco because they were switching balls from the regular ball back to the kicking ball. It was a mess.
It was just
an absolute mess.
And the one thing I've noticed, if Dean Blandino has to go on Twitter and explain something during a game...
Yeah, during the game.
That's usually a pretty bad sign for everybody. They'll comment on it afterwards, but if they have to do it in the midst of a game, usually not a good sign, but... At the end of the day, Seattle wins, Buffalo loses, and the season continues. Another one for the Seahawks at home.
Yeah, here we go. The Seahawks win at home, and they're still on top of the NFC West and in charge of that division.
Yeah.
So, well, we'll call that a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford. You can find the team account at Packers. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.